Thanks for joining us this morning. I want to make a correction to last week's show before I introduce our guest today. On the 21st of December, we will be having a fundraiser at Mod Pizza in Oral Valley from 10:30 in the morning until 10 o'clock at night. And we'll also be selling blue light bulbs so you can show your support for law enforcement. I hope everybody goes. If you want more details, you can go to our website at lawmatters1030.org. In the tab that says events, the flyer is there so you can check it out. Okay, I've got a studio full of people. And I'm going to start over here in the corner. And I am going to ask you to introduce yourself and tell me the agency you're with. And we'll go around the room.
Thank you. My name is Brett Bernstein. I am the sergeant of the DUI unit in the Pima County Sheriff's Department. And I'm also the president of the Southern Arizona DUI Task Force here in Tucson.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that. Okay.
Good morning. My name is Monica Rosano. I'm the assistant chief with the Picture Rocks Fire and Medical District.
Okay.
And I'm Corey Minix. I'm with the Department of Public Safety.
Good morning. I'm Francisco Ortiz, staff sergeant with the U.S. Army National Guard. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. I'm Sergeant Kelly with Pima County Sheriff Department. I'm the recruiting supervisor, and we are hiring now.
So as you can see, we're going to get everybody to do safe things over the holiday, and then we're going to all ask you to be recruited to one of these great agencies. So the reason I asked you to come on here, and especially Monica, fires during the holiday season seem to be pretty high.
Yes.
So what do people typically do that you wish they wouldn't?
Well, there's a few things, actually. Most common holiday fire concerns are cooking fires, so turkey fryers, or even just on the stove, because we do a lot of cooking during the holidays, as well as Christmas trees and space heaters. So those being the top three biggest ones, there's multiple things that we can do to try and prevent the fire and then know how to react in case there is a fire with those.
Okay, if somebody's cooking a turkey, a perfectly good turkey, and they decide to put it in a bat of fat and fry it, what would you recommend they do? Typically, so, not inside the house.
Right. The first thing is placement, definitely, but not just even putting it outside, but making sure that you're away from the house. A lot of people will do it underneath the back porch, and if that catches fire, it can catch the porch, which will then catch the house, that kind of deal. So definitely placement, making sure what your fryer is on, so you don't want it on a wood decking. Try and put it on either concrete or dirt, something that's not going to catch fire if you do spill the oil that you're cooking in.
Are these fryers gas or?
Some have a propane tank that's attached to it. That's the heating source. So yeah, that's definitely
a concern.
So it's
like a bomb.
Yeah, so if it catches fire, it can start heating up the tubing that goes from the propane tank to that. And if it's bad enough, then yeah, it can cause the tank to go off. So the biggest thing is to try and prevent that from happening, which is, like I said, placement. And then common mistakes are the turkey, when you are cooking it, making sure that it's thawed all the way, because if it's not, if it's wet or that kind of stuff, the water going into the hot oil causes it to splatter, which is what hits the flame, the heat, and starts the fire.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah.
So how do you put a fire like that out? Do you use just a fire extinguisher, water? You can't use water.
You're not supposed to use water. Fire extinguishers are the quickest, easiest. You can have your at-home fire extinguishers that are for, like, the kitchen. So it's for the grease fires and flammable.
Specifically?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So there's a bunch of different extinguishers. But, yeah, you can get them at, like, Lowe's, Home Depot. So you can have one in your home, so that way it's readily available as well. But the biggest thing is for grease fires, we teach people to try and smother it. Like, if you're cooking on the stove, you can put the lid over the pan that's burning the oil, that kind of stuff. But if that's not possible, the best thing, obviously, would be call 911 as soon as possible. The quicker you get us there, the more we can stop any further damage to your home.
Okay, what about Christmas trees?
Christmas trees. So both real and fake. The biggest thing is that with real trees, you want to try and get a fresh cut tree, so that way, and that you're watering it every day, because it's the dry tree that truly presents the fire hazard. So a lot of people, on top of having the dry Christmas tree, they'll leave their lights on. They plug it into multiple, yes, you know, different devices outlets, and yeah, decorations extensions into one extension cord. Yeah, and they're overcharging that. The biggest things is to make sure that if you're watering your tree every day, also make sure that you turn the lights off when you're sleeping, that kind of stuff. And then you can always check if there's any damage to the light bulbs or the wires, then you're not going to want to use those. So, and if you feel it getting hot, feel the wires or those that are putting off excessive heat, then you're going to want to consider taking those off and replacing them. But once the tree has dried up, the biggest thing is to get it out of the home and not to put it outside, placed up against your home, where if it does catch on fire, that it's going to cause any damage. Other than that, you're going to also want to make sure wherever you're placing your tree, people put out a lot of candles, different things like that. So make sure that it's away from any heat sources. That way, if something does spark up on an outlet or something like that, it's not gonna immediately hit the tree.
Yeah, it's a bad idea to have like multiple splitters and everything in this one electrical cord. Yeah. And you know, you're trying to light up the whole house from this one electrical cord,
right?
And just because the lights go on doesn't mean it's safe and it's good to go.
Right,
you really need to check all your lights before you start using them. Oh, and that, yes, includes outside lights too.
Yes, and that brings up a good point, because a lot of lights will specify whether it's meant to be used indoors or outdoors. Make sure that you're using the appropriate lights. That way it doesn't...
You don't have a problem, hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Okay, I want to talk about, we're on the road, it's the holiday, and a lot of people like to drive to their grandma's house over the river through the woods, and they get tired, fatigue driving. Talk to me about fatigue driving.
So with fatigue drivers, it's a kind of a unique experience for pretty much everyone. That's definitely something that in a lot of cases, fatigue drivers, while they're driving down the road, they definitely present as if they are impaired. They're driving down the road, their reaction time is going to be delayed. They're also going to have some problems staying within their lane or something like that, again, as someone who's impaired would be. The difference, of course, is being that, as opposed to being impaired, they're fatigued. So, you know, as for one of us, from a law enforcement perspective,
state trooper,
right? So from our perspective, that's one of those things that we don't know whether or not they're fatigued or whether or not they're impaired.
It's hard to tell the difference
until we stop them.
Yeah.
And hopefully one of two things happens: that if we do stop them, or when we do stop them, that it wakes them up, that they're, you know, at that point, then they're awake and aware.
Awake.
Right. You scare them awake, and hopefully that they can get wherever it is that they're trying to get to safely, or they realize that they are in fact too fatigued to be driving. And hopefully then they would, you know, turn the wheel over to someone else in the car that would be better able to drive at that time.
Yeah, I think a lot of people that, you know, visiting relatives and everything, but you have to get back to work and you get on the road and you just don't realize until you've, what do they call it, white line fever or something. I don't remember what they call it when you've been on the road and you're just like staring down the road. You're not really aware of what's going on around you.
Right. Tunnel vision is definitely a thing when you're tired, from firsthand experience myself. But, you know, yeah, you kind of zone out,
mm-hmm,
and become at the very least less aware of what you see going on around you, as well as, you know, what you could be doing yourself.
There's another thing you talked about, you know, being impaired. And Brett here is in charge of everybody who's impaired. Talk to us about what's going to be going on this holiday season with your unit.
Well, with my unit, the DUI unit at the Sheriff's Department, and with our local task force, the Southern Arizona DUI Task Force, the public will see increased enforcement efforts, meaning more deputies, police officers, and troopers on the street making traffic stops, specifically looking for drunk and otherwise impaired drivers.
How about distracted drivers?
Of course. You know, Arizona has, or I should say, local jurisdictions have several different ordinances preventing drivers from using their cell phones or other electronic devices while driving, and we're always looking for that when on the road.
So let's go through the process. What?
Well, with in reference to the distracted driving, Arizona does now have a statute for the entire state which prohibits a person from using an electronic device while they're driving for reasons other than navigation, calling 911, or something that would be essential while they're driving down the road. So as of January 1st is when we'll be able to write tickets, but we can stop you for simply having you know, your iPod or your cell phone in your hand while you're driving down the road.
What about the newspaper? I saw a guy the other day with a newspaper stretched across the steering wheel driving down the road.
That's impressive. I can't say I've seen that, but nonetheless impressive. But I'm sure, you know, depending on what the person's doing while they're driving down the road.
Reading, right.
And I'm talking more about, you know, if they're driving over lane lines or, you know, something like that, or if they're, you know, speeding, driving too slowly, any number of things. You could probably make an articulation for different statutes that would also apply for that. But the reading of a newspaper would definitely be a contributing factor to that.
Okay, is there a difference between getting pulled over for DUI between the county and the state as far as the process and what happens to you during the court process? Are the statutes the same?
I can take this.
Okay.
The process and the statutes are the same. We all follow the state statutes for DUI enforcement, and we all follow the same state court processes for how to gather the evidence and how to get a successful prosecution.
Okay. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about that process. Thanks for staying with us. We are talking about the DUI task force and what happens when you get pulled over and charged or arrested for, you get arrested, handcuffed?
Absolutely.
Okay. What is the process? What happens with the person once? How do you prove that they've been naughty? And what happens after that?
Well, it starts when we're watching the driver's movement on the roadway. We're looking for signs consistent with impairment, weaving out of the lane, driving too slowly, driving too fast. There's many things that can lead to a traffic stop for a DUI. Once we get you pulled over, we're looking for signs consistent with impairment. So the red, watery, bloodshot eyes, the odor of intoxicants like different kinds of alcohol, or I should say different kinds of beer. And slurred speech, mumbled speech, slow to respond to questions, all these kinds of things. And then the third phase includes the field sobriety test, where we have you walk on a line, balance on a foot.
Message.
We can check your eyes. And then to answer your question, we get into the part that helps us with prosecution, which is to get your blood alcohol concentration. Different departments around the state use multiple different processes for that. The Sheriff's Department and the other local agencies use blood. Most DUI enforcement officers in Tucson are also qualified phlebotomists, so we can draw an arrestee's blood on the roadside, and that gives us a very accurate blood alcohol concentration that we can use in court for prosecution purposes.
Can a person refuse to have their blood drawn?
A person can refuse to have their blood drawn, but there are some consequences to that. They would lose their license for between 1 and 2 years just for refusing. And then even if that were to happen, we'd still call a judge and attempt to obtain a telephonic search warrant and take their blood against their will anyway.
Do you need a search warrant for everybody that you draw blood from?
No, if the driver consents to a blood draw, we don't need a search warrant, but for every other reason, we would.
Okay, once you go to court, somebody is found guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, what is a fine like this cost, and what are the ripple effects of somebody being arrested for that?
Sure, a misdemeanor DUI, meaning the first DUI a person is arrested for that doesn't include any children or any license violations or damage to other vehicles or injuries to any other persons, involves jail time, at least one day in jail, and it involves about $1,500 in fines, and a lot of hassle and embarrassment amongst family, friends, and coworkers that cannot be avoided.
So if you end up going to jail for this, you could end up losing your job?
I would say it's probable. I mean, it's a misdemeanor conviction. It's highly probable that your workplace will hear about it.
How long do you go to jail?
Well, at least a day for a misdemeanor, but it can go all the way up to manslaughter if you kill another person, and that could be a couple of decades in prison.
Yeah, that'll lose your job for sure. It's smart not to do that. What happens with the state? Is it the same process?
Right. It's exactly the same process. We use the same statutes. It's the same charging. At least in Pima County, we use the same court. We use the Pima County Justice Court down here. So same judges, same attorneys, pretty much everything is exactly the same. The only thing that changes is the department that's up on the stand.
So depending on how many times this person has been out there drinking and driving and, you know, wiping out cars and citizens, depends on what the judge is going to do.
Yeah, the judge can take all of that into consideration and make that as part of their ruling, depending on what could be appropriate for that, as well as what the jury decides as well.
I need to have Judge Bergen back on, because when we're sitting there and you're going through the jury selection process, they say we can't talk about what happened previously. We're talking about this, and then it's up to him to take, or any judge, to take in everything else, I guess.
Right. So the as far as the charging aspect of that, that's more so on the judge. They're typically the ones that will set the fine, the jail time, all of those kind of things. It's the jury as to whether or not they're guilty as what they're charged with.
You know, if I could chime in here,
yeah.
We're very lucky to live in Arizona, because Arizona is one of the most strict states in the country when it comes to DUI laws. In Arizona, with a misdemeanor DUI for a first-timer, it's extremely expensive. You will go to jail. That doesn't happen in most states in the U.S. And you'll have, once you're out, you'll have to put what's called an ignition interlock device into your car, for where you'll be blowing into a device in your car to make sure you've not been drinking for a full year. And we have several laws that aggravate DUI that makes it a felony. So if you're driving on a suspended license, if you're driving with someone under 15 years old in the car, if it's your third DUI within 7 years, or if you're caught driving the wrong way on the road, it becomes a felony to be impaired while driving in Arizona. And those bring with them extremely high penalties.
Okay, what if you're on drugs? And I know some people, and this happened to a friend of mine mucho years ago. She was taking cough syrup because she lost her voice. She kept taking this cough syrup because it tasted good, and she kind of got drunk. Mm-hmm. So on cough syrup. So what happens if somebody's doing other stuff besides drinking? Are the fines harsher?
Well, impairment is impairment, whether it's from alcohol or drugs. The same statutes apply. There is one statute specific to the use of drugs as opposed to alcohol, but it really comes down to impairment is impairment. If you feel different, you drive different.
True that. Okay. So how many people do you get one during a holiday season? Have you ever kept track?
We do keep very good statistics. Last year during the holiday season, which is Thanksgiving to New Year's, the participating agencies in the Southern Arizona DUI Task Force arrested over 400 drivers for DUI.
Oh my God. Really? Yeah.
It's astounding, and frankly, it's embarrassing to have neighbors that would make those kinds of decisions.
And there's no excuse for it. There's absolutely no excuse. There's so many different ways. Like AAA offers driving, there's Uber, there's regular cab, you know, normal cabs. There's people you can hire to be your driver. I saw that online yesterday when I was researching this. I was like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. Just here, drive me around so I can get drunk and stupid. At least you're not killing people or endangering other lives, right?
Right.
Okay. All right. We've got the Army here, the entire Army here.
The Army National Guard. The Army National Guard.
And I understand you guys are on a mission.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
We are.
Tell me.
We're on a daily mission. So the Army National Guard is a part-time service that offers full-time benefits. And
that's impressive.
It is. It is. It's very impressive, and it's great once you are a member of the Arizona Army National Guard and you're able to take advantage of those healthcare benefits at very low cost, retirement. You get a pension from us, and then you're able to take, you know, your leave. You're able to have a part-time job as well as having a military career. So it's a mission that we have, and it's a daily mission to try to give our community better career opportunities, especially our young community in high school, because we are one of the few branches that can actually enlist somebody at 17 as a junior. And
every mother out there right now just went,
Yes. But once they see how they can benefit from it and how fruitful it could be, I'm sure that that's a change of mind, a change of heart for sure. But I've been lucky enough to actually be working with Sergeant Keller from the Pima County Sheriff's Department, just to give our community better efforts in different aspects of things. You know, they can definitely have two careers going at once, and that's an example of how the National Guard works, because we're part-time soldiers, but we all have different careers on the outside.
Okay, have you been deployed?
No.
What happens with your job if you get deployed?
So with the National Guard or any reserve unit or any reserve component, I should say, I'm sorry, you're covered under your USERRA. So it's a federal law, and you're...
And it's called USERRA?
USERRA.
Oh, USERRA.
Yes, ma'am. So you're covered under federal law, and they have to hold your job up to 5 years. And of course, that's with proper notice from you as an individual, as an employee. You can't just show up the day before and say, hey, I'm leaving for a year, 12 months, 6 months, whatever the case is. You actually have to sit there and do your due diligence to advise your employer.
Okay. There are situations where people are deployed and they don't have a lot of time before they have to be gone. What happens in a situation like that?
So in a situation like that, we do have USERRA representatives here in the state that work for the National Guard. And that's their lane. I'm not too well versed on that, but they do take care of those situations themselves.
Okay, so when you come back after touring Europe for 5 years, your job will be there.
Yes, ma'am.
And what do you do?
So I'm a active guard recruiter. So I'm actually a recruiter here in Tucson, and that is my full time job. So I'm full time with the National Guard.
Okay. So if they deploy you, where would you go?
So as
to the border, we've got people on the border.
Yes, and that's so the National Guard as a recruiter or any recruiter, you're non-deployable. So you actually get to stay here and you don't get deployed as a recruiter.
What a cushy job that is.
Absolutely, man. I love my job.
Okay. And that's what you're going to do for your entire military career?
No, we'll see what the future brings. We'll see what the future brings. But as a recruiter for the National Guard, I tell people all the time, it sounds cliche, but it's the best kept secret in the military. It's the best kept secret. The Arizona Army National Guard truly takes care of their soldiers.
Okay, is it the National Guard that's on the border right now?
Yes.
Okay. So do they get to go home at night?
Depending on your job, but So it depends on what you're doing. It really depends on what you're doing out there.
They're fixing fences.
Yeah.
That's what I heard. I don't know.
I'm not too sure either. I'm not too sure either on that.
Okay. I'll let you off the hook. Tony, tell us about the prison. Recruiting.
Oh, the recruiting? Okay. That's what I'm here for. Can you hear me? That's what I'm here for, to talk about recruiting. And I did mention that we are hiring, right? I mentioned that earlier for everybody.
Yeah. So is Picture Rocks.
We have a corrections process that opened on Friday. It's open right now. You just need to have a high school diploma, 18 years old, get you in line. Once you're 21, you can apply for our deputy process. But the reason I'm here today is to talk about the partnership with Sergeant Ortiz in the Army National Guard. The Pima County Sheriff Department supports veterans and supports reserve units. We pay them 240 hours a year when they go to deploy or they do their weekends. That's every year. If they go away, an example I can talk about is we had an individual who went away for a year and a half with the Army National Guard. When he came back, he was in process. He got to take a sergeant's test, even though he wasn't there for about a year and a half. He steps right back into where he was when he left. So all his...
With a promotion?
He got to apply and go through the process, just like he was here, like with everybody else working. The beauty of working with the Army National Guard is they have a military police unit here in town, which you get additional training with the National Guard besides the training we provide. So it really works to the citizens' benefit. We're getting extra training for our employees at no cost to the county.
Okay, I need to know, this training, does that translate to college credit?
Well, the Army National Guard, as the sergeant mentioned, is full-time benefits on a part-time basis. They get paid, right?
Yes,
guys provide the GI Bill.
Absolutely. So there's very good education benefits. And with the training, we have a joint service transcript. So as an Army National Guard member, if you go to your basic training, your job training, you come back and you pick up any additional training, once you go to apply for a college or you're in college, they could actually use those individual training that you've been to and give you college credit.
Well, that sounds like a good deal.
Absolutely. And I'm pretty sure that when you go, let's say for the Pima County Sheriff's Department and you go to the academy, you can use your GI Bill to get additional money.
They actually do that.
Okay, we're going to have to discuss this more. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. Okay, thanks for staying with us. I want to get back to the DUI thing. And I recently have seen an ad on TV. Some law firm is advertising that you can be arrested for a DUI, but your equipment is broke. Police department's equipment is broke. So this attorney can get you off of the DUI. Is your equipment broke?
Our equipment is not broken. At least with the Department of Public Safety, I know that our equipment is certified or the calibrations are certified.
Mm-hmm.
We do that annually. The reason that we do that is so that way we can make sure that we have the most accurate testing process possible, as well as accurate results. So that way we don't have, you know, something like a false positive on something, or we have an inaccurate blood alcohol concentration for either alcohol or drugs. So we do that so that way we can make sure that, again, what we're doing is true and accurate.
Okay, Brett, is your equipment broke?
Well, I got to be honest. We use the state's equipment, but I will add that the equipment is held to an extremely high standard. I would say higher than it even needs to be. And the scientists, the literal scientists that determine these results for us, have very high integrity.
So to listen to an ad on TV from this attorney doesn't mean you can go out and party. And he thinks he has a loophole, but it's not true.
Right. So, hustler's got to hustle.
Hustler's got to hustle. I can't believe an attorney would lie. It's crazy. Okay, you said Picture Rocks was hiring. What is the process for somebody to get hired on to Picture Rocks or any fire department?
Some of the fire departments differ, but for Picture Rocks, what we do is more or less the foundation of the testing is the same. We'll go through a written exam. They'll do a physical agility test. They'll also do an oral board. We can go through practical skills. So for us, we require for you to already be fire EMT certified, have your medical and your fire certifications before you can test for our district. Some of the larger agencies, City of Tucson, Northwest Gold Ranch, you don't necessarily have to have all of your certifications. They'll train you in their academy. But for us, you go through, you do your written exam, your PAT, and then you'll also do practical skills, an oral board, and then a chief's interview. So with the leadership of the agency, that's once you complete that, then the selections are made. And then we do a transitional academy. So since you're already certified, we teach you specifics that are to Picture Rocks, our agency, just for 2 weeks. And then before we kick you out into the field, so that way you kind of know how to use our equipment, you know our system, we've got some of the basic level training completed with you.
I think people think firefighter, they cover everything, and there's a huge difference between big city and you know, out in the boonies, or like what my son did, the Bureau of Land Management, way out there where nobody's ever been before.
As far as like the job, all of the stuff that we'll respond to, all of that is the same no matter where you're at, no matter how big or how small the agency is. And we also have a Fire Explorer program. So for the youth, ages 14 to 21, we can kind of touch base with high school students that might be interested in the fire service to see what that training's like. So we have that up and running, and that's kind of gives us a career path. So they can come out of high school. We look at sponsoring them if they don't have their certs. Marana High School is the one closest to us. They have a program that can, you can test for your EMT cert, that kind of stuff. But the goal is to get these high school students, give them a career path to be out here with Picture Rocks. So we train them, they get experience, they get to ride along on the station, ride along on our trucks, and enjoy all of that too.
It could be fun. How come you're not working with her?
Yeah, come back.
Firefighters in the Army?
Yeah.
No, we work with all first responders. I mean, we have firefighters in the Army National Guard. We have local law enforcement officers. I mean, we have doctors, teachers, you name it. We have them in the Army National Guard.
Okay, we've got a caller on the line. Ingrid, what's on your mind?
Oh, good morning. I'm actually calling about the police, the alcohol equipment. But I would like to say first that I have always had the deepest respect for the firefighters. I can't imagine running into a fire. My instinct is to run away. They are marvelous people, and they're very competent in other areas. But that should be equipment for alcohol testing. How frequently do you find that the equipment is not working properly when it is brought in for an inspection? And why is it 1 year? It seems to me that maybe a couple of times a year would be a good idea to have it looked at. But what do I know? I'm not an expert. I'll hang up. Thank you.
Corey?
Right. So the reason that we keep it at 1 year, it's so that way we can make sure that we have the systems calibrated properly. As far as, you know, whether or not we've had inaccurate results or anything like that, I've never heard of that. It's not to say that it can't happen, but the systems are, I guess, calibrated each time that the system is being put to use. So think about it like a fail-safe.
Okay.
You know, you like the extension cord in your house, right? You've got the breaker that's as part of that extension cord. So that way, if that cord then becomes overloaded before anything bad happens, the breaker should or the switch should turn off.
Right.
So kind of a similar concept as far as the equipment that we use. We'll test that before we go through and actually have a sample that's run through the system.
So every time it's used, it's actually being reset.
Right. It's being evaluated as to whether or how accurate it is.
So don't believe that commercial where the attorney tells you that your equipment's broke, right, Brett?
That's right. It's not broke.
It's not broke. Okay. So is there a difference? I'm sure there is a difference. If somebody is picked up and they have drugs in their system or you smell marijuana, mm-hmm. how do you prove that?
Well, the blood is our gold in these situations because it can test for all of these things, alcohol or drugs or otherwise. The Pima County Sheriff's Department uses blood only. We don't use any breath devices. And the blood is sent to the DPS, or Department of Public Safety Laboratory, where they use a machine called a gas chromatograph. And that gas chromatograph splits up all of the known materials in the blood sample and reports them all individually. And then the scientists that work in the laboratory interpret it to show which compounds exist within the blood, like alcohol, marijuana, or other impairing drugs. It's a very specific and a technical process, and it's been proven time and time again.
So it's accurate.
It's very accurate. The gas chromatograph, every time a blood sample is put through the machine, it's put through with known standards. So the machine is told what alcohol is and what marijuana is and what an opioid is every single time. And then that's compared to the samples that are found in the, not the samples, but that's compared to what's found in the blood samples to show the accuracy.
So I'm recommend everybody stay sober. If you're going to drink, stay home. Or stay at your friend's house or call Uber or AAA or any of these other happy people. Okay. Corey, how long have you been on the department? Or Brett?
I've been with the Sheriff's Department for 14 years, and I've spent about 10 of those years doing traffic-related investigations.
And what got you into the DUI?
Well, I think I was drawn to it. We all start in patrol, and I was working late nights, and I think I just had a knack for it. I was constantly coming across impaired drivers, whether driving or in collisions or killing other people, and I decided to make that my career.
Well, I thank you for that. Oh. And keep our streets a little safer. And Corey, what got you into it?
It's pretty similar to the same thing.
How long have you been with the troopers, state troopers?
I've been with DPS for 5 years, so I'm pretty green still. I got a long time ahead of me, and I'm really excited about it.
So I had somebody ask this. When you have the county and the city and the state, how do you divvy up the territories?
So at least for us, DPS is responsible for all of the highways and state routes that are, at least in Pima County, within Pima County.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as all the other things, I'm not entirely sure, and I'll let Brett speak to that.
Well, the county takes everything that's not already taken by another jurisdiction. So we don't have to worry about the highways. We don't have to worry about the city of Tucson or the towns like Moreno or Valley or Sahuarito. We take what's called the unincorporated areas. And then we're always there to assist those agencies with anything that they need.
So, but you're because you're the county and you're the state, you can go anywhere, actually, right?
Absolutely. Anyone in the state who's a certified peace officer can make a stop anywhere in the state. We're all certified peace officers within the state of Arizona.
Okay. Tony, what do you do with the jail? What do you do? Yeah. Well, I know you've got a lot of guests over there.
We do have a lot of guests. We have some people over there, I think, for DUI.
Yeah.
I think that's what we do at the jail.
You need to talk into the mic.
Okay. Well, when I work at the jail, we just make sure people are safe. while they're waiting to go to court. That's what we do. So an agency or a law enforcement agency might bring somebody in for something minor that they need to spend some time there or go to court, and we just make sure that they're safe and taken care of, get fed, place to sleep, that kind of stuff until they get ready for court and go. Once they go to court and they're adjudicated, if they're going to go away somewhere else, then we make sure we keep them until they go or we let them out. That's what we do at the jail. We're very nice there at the jail.
We're sharing a microphone here. So you're a different part of Pima County Sheriff's Department. So you do a different duty. Is that what you've been doing since you got on the Sheriff's Department?
Yes. Yes, I hired on at the Sheriff's Department to work at the jail. I came in as a corrections officer. I came from out of state, actually, looking for a job here in Arizona, and I found this one. I started out at the jail. I worked there for about a year and a half inside the jail, and then I went to the training center and started working in the training center, and then I promoted out of the training center and went back to the jail, taking care of the ADSEG, or the administrative segregation section. And then I was...
What is that?
That's where people don't play nice together inside the jail. That's where we house them, just to keep them separate so that they can play by themselves.
Okay. Play with yourself. Okay, let's go around, and I want to hear your best recruiting, because obviously you're in a different part of the jail.
Me?
Yeah.
Well, you're not
in the jail. I'm reading this thing. You're in a different part. You do a completely different thing. So when you're working with the county, there's various jobs you can do. It doesn't have to be the prison or DUI.
Right, thankfully. Yeah, that's a much harder job than my job.
Yeah? You think so?
The prison?
Yeah.
We don't work at the prison, so we actually don't know.
Well, I mean, the corrections officers in generally, I think that's a very difficult job. The last place I want to be with a criminal is in a locked room.
I hear you. Okay. We've got a caller. Greg, what's on your mind?
Hey, thanks, Sherry. Let me ask your guests what they think of a novel idea, which I had seen in Los Angeles court, where the judge, when he's confronted with defendants, maybe young folks who like to use guns and fire them at random, he orders that they take a tour through the office of the medical examiner to see the results to see bodies, that have, dead bodies. Now, your guests have probably seen some scenes that you and I haven't seen, although I think, maybe, did you work in law enforcement in Illinois, Sherry? But more to the point, pardon?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, more to the point, what about some of these scenes with the family's permission, if they're allowed, if the officers are allowed to video some of the scenes after a crash where a drunk driver's involved, and instead of these PSAs which say to kids, oh, don't drink and drive, those are too general, but when you see, it's sort of like scaring them into reality. What do you guys think of that?
Corey?
I think that's a really interesting idea. NHTSA has actually put out recently a commercial. I think I saw it during the summertime. It was not a real live crash scene, but again, it was a commercial put on by NHTSA.
Right.
And they depicted this scene where there was a crash that was involved. Again, there was someone who was depicted to be deceased on scene, as well as another young individual. I can't remember if it was male or female, but driver, and was in the back seat of a patrol car. And then I believe at the end of that was something of, would you believe this was you if you were to drink and drive?
And it can happen in a heartbeat.
Absolutely. It can happen in any split second.
Yeah.
Another quick point, Sherry, if I may. I saw in some jurisdictions they're lowering the blood alcohol level to maybe is it 0.05. Is that helpful, or are we just screening too many people if we drop the threshold?
Brett?
I think it's an incredible idea. I think that if we truly want to get impaired drivers off the road, it has to be sober or nothing. I think that... I believe it's Utah that lowered their alcohol concentration,
right,
for the law to 0.05. In Arizona, we have a legal limit of 0.04 for commercial drivers because they're trucks can cause so much more damage and injuries, but I think we're kidding ourselves that we're going to end the problem with the 0.08 level. I think over time it'll progress where we'll lower that limit here in Arizona as well.
Good idea. Greg? He's gone?
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm good. I'm good.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening. And Corey, you've got a little demonstration on the table, and if you can use your imagination, he's got a visual aid here.
Right. So while we were on a break, I was explaining this. Arizona has the DUI law is impaired to the slightest degree, and people don't really take this to a whole lot of thought because everyone thinks of DUI as being an 08 or, as Greg said, an 05. However, in Arizona, we have an incredibly unique law, which is impaired to the slightest degree. So imagine that you have your standard 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper in front of you. Now, if you take just the smallest corner that you could possibly tear off from that paper, that would be the slightest degree. So you have all of this 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper that would be impairment. And then that little teeny tiny corner would be impaired by the slightest degree. And that is all that is required for us to be able to prove a case for a DUI, which is the statute that we typically would arrest someone for, especially if there's no aggravated circumstances like Brett had talked about earlier.
Okay. I'm not going to drink this holiday season. There goes the eggnog. Forget it. I'm looking at this demonstration going, okay, not worth it. And it's really not worth it. It's not, you know, it's not just you. It's not your car. It's all the people around you, the lives that you're endangering, and God forbid you killed somebody. Holy cow. It's not worth it. And I had somebody, this is last year, you know, I don't want to call Uber and get a ride home because then my car is over here and I'm over there. And I'm like, well, if you're dead, you can't drive it anyway. So, you know, It doesn't, what difference does it make? Take an Uber or what are these other companies called, Lyft, and just be safe. Use your head. Like my dad used to say, use your head. Your future depends on it. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, you can. I was saying you can also rent a scooter now. There's scooters everywhere you can rent.
You know, I saw going down Campbell, heading southbound, an adult and a child on a scooter on the sidewalk. Neither one of them were wearing a helmet. And I'm like, and they're littered all over the place. These scooters are everywhere.
Oh, absolutely.
It's crazy. Yeah, rent a scooter. Is it okay? Some of these scooters can move out. Can he get picked up for a DUI if he's on a scooter and he's drunk? No?
No. The scooter was specifically excluded from the DUI statute.
It's in writing?
Yeah, they put it into the Arizona Revised Statutes.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right. Okay, we only have a few minutes left. I want to remind everybody, the Army's recruiting. The Corrections Department is recruiting. State troopers are recruiting firefighters. We need firefighters.
Yes, and we actually have a civilian program too, so you don't have to be fire certified. We're actually opening up for EMTs and paramedics that are just medical personnel.
Does the state police have a citizens academy?
So with DPS, we have our own academy now. However, we do accept what are called lateral applicants. Those could be people that go through a course through like a community college or something like that where they become post-certified to be a peace officer out of the college or the community college, whichever program they choose that they're going to go on.
Cool. Okay. And if you want to work for the Sheriff's Department, you don't have to go to the corrections building. You can be out there on patrol. And they go through the training right here in Tucson?
They do, yes, right by the Pima County Jail.
So you can get used to the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Tony?
So when we're talking about recruiting for the Pima County Sheriff Department, I just want you to understand, you go to gopcsd.org, and we hire for civilians, deputies, and corrections officers. Everything is through the same. We take care of all that. And I think
one-stop shop.
One-stop shop. I think the National Guard has some websites also. Right?
Absolutely. So just to touch base on the Army National Guard, so it'll help you get into first responder careers, help you with law enforcement, help you with the fire department. They actually give you preference points for being a military veteran. And if you want to learn more about the National Guard, you can definitely look us up online, nationalguard.com/AZ.
Do they have age restrictions? I'm thinking of joining.
You can actually, the ages range from 17 as a junior in high school, and you can enlist up to 34.
Okay. That excludes me. Okay, I want to thank everybody for being here. I know a couple of you have worked all night long, and you're still here, and you're still awake. I'm really happy about that. Next week, we are going to have the Director of Field Operations on from the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol right here in Tucson. And I'll remind everybody about our fundraiser we're going to have at Mod Pizza in Oral Valley. And maybe we can get the sheriff to show up.
I'll speak with my father-in-law.
Maybe you can be there and recruit people after they eat.
I definitely will.
Samples of, push-ups and...
We can
is
do that.
Is that what they have to do to...
Yes, you do have to
jumping
pass a physical
jacks?
Fitness test. No, not jump. You do jumping jacks, but that's part of another program.
Okay. I want to thank everybody. Until then, shop local and stay safe.